Welcome back to another episode of Life with Your Dog. My name's Panos, and today is a little bit of a ranty episode, and I'm going to keep it short and sweet and straight to the point. Using food is really important when it comes to your training. You do, in my opinion, need to use some food in some stage of your training, especially when it comes to teaching obedience commands, teaching new skills, and through the desensitization, counter-conditioning process when it comes to reactivity, anxious and fearful responses to the world, and, of course, aggression. But food isn't everything. Food is really important. It's and in my opinion, and the way that I use food in training, it's mainly used, especially in the learning phase, and, of course, in the training phase. If you're not familiar with what I'm talking about, there's the learning phase, the training phase, and the proving phase. Those are the three phases in which we want to create a certain behavior within our dog. Go back to episodes in the past. We did a whole episode on those three phases. So you just type in phases of training. I'm sure it'll come up in the search. And in the learning phase, your dog doesn't know the behavior. And I think using food is really appropriate, especially for dogs that are higher drive. And of course, that have a decent food motivation. That's really easy. It's a go-to. But some dogs may prefer the ball or the tug compared to your food. However, to teach a new command and to get very precise behaviors, it's pretty difficult to get that with just the ball, unless you're using just a free shaping system, which I do use free shaping at times, but I don't use it when it comes to teaching commands. Use your food to shape a behavior. You have lower arousal, more clarity, and also you can be very specific about what you're rewarding and communicating that very easily to the dog. When it comes to the training phase, so now your dog knows the behavior, you've given it a word, you give your verbal command, dog does the behavior, and then you start to reward them. And in the training phase, you want to start rewarding intermittently. You want to reward randomly, so your dog is essentially guessing and gambling to see, well, if I do the behavior, the food may happen. But it may not always happen, but it may happen. That creates more drive, more anticipation, more reliability, and less prone to extinction. Reward all the time, reward, reward, reward. One day you stop rewarding, or you don't reward at the same contingency, then your dog may stop offering the behavior. The behavior may start to go extinct. But if you're rewarding intermittently, your dog's getting randomly rewarded. So out of 10 times, you may reward the first, the third, the fourth, the eighth. Your dog doesn't know when it's going to happen. So then technically, your dog gives more energy towards the behavior, more drive towards it. And this is really important to understand, is because in the proofing phase, your dog now does the behavior, it's generalized, it's reliable, your dog understands it. You'll still reward a behavior even if it's proofed, but you don't want to be relying on feeding that behavior. For example, my dog's down, he's fully proofed. I just last week went sheep herding at Hooked on Hounds with good mate Dan. And in that moment, even the first time we did a couple months ago, first time I've had him around sheep, never given commands around that stimulus before. I say his name, I tell him to down, he lays down. It's proofed. I don't have to. Now, in that moment, I did reward him, of course. I release him so he can continue doing his thing around the sheep. But I'm not using food or not relying on food. He wouldn't even take food in that moment. So the reason why I'm bringing this up is because it's something that I've probably failed at communicating early on in the training, or maybe as certain sessions are going on with my clients. I still see them carrying food, even like after we've done training, I'm watching the videos, or I'll see them walking around, you know, even a year later after seeing each other. Now, some dogs still require the food, and we'll get into that. So you're still on that journey. You're probably working through the motions. But at some stage, you need to leave the house without food. You can't rely on the food. You have to wean off the food appropriately. So your dog now does the behavior, whatever it is, whether it's holding it down at the coffee shop, or whether it's getting your dog's focus on you, maybe potentially is going to react or act out around a certain stimulus, another dog or a person. And the food, again, is important. You know, in the early phases, in the learning phases of counter conditioning, you're teaching your dog to look at you, and you're teaching your dog to be, well, you don't teach them to be engaged, but you get your dog engaged with you. And, you know, you go through the luring games and the name game, and you do all the cool stuff so your dog finds value in focusing on you. And I like to layer in pressure through that whole system, even from the beginning, to show them, hey, tap, tap, tap on the leash, look at me, boom, I take the pressure off and I reward. And I put and I layer in that pressure so that we could utilize that later. And also it's more reliable to get your dog's focus, or even to, like with my dog, if I tap, tap and gave a command, he would do it better and faster and with more anticipation. And he's happy about it too, because he understands that pressure can be turned off when he does the behavior. And you want that to be something that you work on in the beginning, so that when it comes to a certain stage, let's just say it's been a couple of months of training, your goal is you want to walk down the street, and when he sees a dog, you get your dog to look at you and you continue walking. You may not even get your dog to look at you. You would hope that your dog just sees another dog walking past you and they don't care. But using the food long after you've started the training now means that you're relying on it. So a group class I get, and there's time to time where I'll be taking people's pouches off and put them in the back of the ute and be like, continue the training session without your pouch. One comment was, oh my God, I feel like I'm losing I lost my left leg, you know, and oh my God, I don't know what to do. And like, you know, the owner starts to get a little bit anxious. Oh my God, what am I going to do? How do I? And you can't have that mentality about the food. You have to be able to leave the house without food. And that's the goal. So holding on for that too long, it's almost like you think you need it, but we put so much energy onto it that we actually do actually need it, and that the session is incomplete without it. And you got to think about it. Does that mean you can't get your dog's focus without food? Does that mean that, oh, are you scared that if your dog sees another thing, we'll say dog in this example, your dog sees another dog, you get them to look at you, are you scared that if you don't reward it, it's going to go away? You know, or is it that you think that your dog still doesn't understand what you want them to do, and you're using the food as your like security blanket? And these are questions for you to ask yourself, obviously. And if I was in front of you, I could probably answer it for you. But if you're relying on that food, then you're hindering yourself, essentially. Because food doesn't proof behaviors. What proofs behaviors is technically, and especially when it comes to like lifestyle behaviors, and I'm talking about advanced obedience and you know, performance on the trial field and performance of a certain behavior. It's usually all the time the dog's anticipating that a reward will come. That's why they're doing it. But when it comes to like lifestyle behaviors, like chilling out at the coffee shop or going to the park and watching the game, and your dog not freaking out because of birds or balls or people or dogs, it's typically not anything to do with the food. You don't use food to teach your dog how to walk on a loose leash. You use your leash. You use your leash pressure. You use food, of course, at the early stages to convince your dog that it's worth doing behaviors for you. But that's where you have to... It's a pressure that is the constant. The constant is the pressure. If, let's just say, it's been a year of starting the training journey, let's just say, and your dog's still, you know, not 100% where you want them. And of course, there's different levels of where your dog's going to be, and not all dogs going to be some perfect angel just because you've done training. You know, it's probably gone too far, and that your dog's developed a really set behavior, or it's a genetic expression, or maybe you're just not that good at timing and consistency and all that. So there's many things going on. It's not just the food. But what's the constant is the pressure. If I'm at the coffee shop and my dog's in a down, or my dog's just laying next to me and the dog walks past and he'll get up, it wouldn't be like, go back down so I can give you food. It's go back down now, and I'm using some leash pressure to communicate, hey, you're not allowed to get up. The reward technically, scientifically, is when I release the pressure, he's been rewarded, because the relief of the pressure feels good. Negative reinforcement, technically. Where if you're using food, positive reinforcement, then you're like, is the dog doing it for food? Does he understand? Like, are you bribing him still? Are you still, like, you know, playing games with him? So it's something that's been a little bit of a bugbear of mine. I'm not really ranting. I guess I'm just informing you. But, you know, I do get a little bit upset when it's like, I go bump into someone, like, why is a pouch on still? Like, you don't need it. It's like, oh, just in case. There is no just in case. The just in case is your leash handling, your communication. So I like to explain it like this. My son's 4 years old. If he says please, thank you, and you're welcome to somebody when they give him something or they're interacting in a social situation, I'll praise him for it. Hey, mate, good boy. Good work for saying thank you. Really good boy. Proud of you. So I'll give him some reinforcement because I think it's good. It's a behavior that I want him to do. If he's 8, 9, 10 years old and he's not saying please, thank you, or you're welcome, it'll be metaphorically, you know, a slap across the chops and be like, what are you doing, mate? Say thank you. So, and again, I wouldn't smack my kid over the head, but metaphorically, you would put pressure on him. You'd be like, hey, why don't you say thank you? What's wrong with you? Hey, give me that thing back. Or it would be some consequence, let's just say. My son's not 10 years old, so I don't know what sort of consequences he'd get. But my point there is that the expectation's been laid now. Now that, and my son, for example, has been saying please, thank you, and you're welcome for ages now. It's been something that we instill in him. It's something that, you know, we'd like to teach him how to be polite and things like that. And we speak to each other generally like that. So, you know, I'd say, oh, thanks, buddy. He's like, oh, you're welcome. I'm like, oh, good boy. Ah, awesome. So, and now it's almost like he just does it. You sneeze, he says, bless you. Again, at first it'd be a praise, but you're not going to praise him at 10 years old for saying good work, for saying please and thank you. So he's 15, good work. He's 20, good work. Like, he always needs reinforcement. Then if he doesn't get reinforcement, he won't be polite. It should just be something that's ingrained within your behavior. That's something that you just do. It's a lifestyle. Walking through a busy environment. Oh my God, okay, I need to have the food in case. If it's in case, you're training. If it's in case, you're training. You're not living and you're not proof the behavior. Are you holding your dog back? Maybe you're happy at that level and you're happy to take the food with you and living your life, but you're not going to have a dog that's going to rely on just context and also your commands, your communication, your vibe with your dog. So you just got to really think about that. Another thing that kind of the same, but not really the same, is that, you know, it's just a reel that I watched on Instagram the other day where it's like, oh, you know, how about those kids that need iPads in the car? Otherwise they freak out because it's been a habit of having the iPad to distract them. Where, like, how about the days where you'd look out the window and watch the raindrops? Like, which one would win? You know, one of them's going real slow and the other one's keeping behind, but the other one catches up and gets past. So random. You only observe raindrops going down a windscreen in the car if you're looking at the window and not staring at the screen. So my point is that are we teaching your dog not to be able to just be bored and calm and tired? And we had this conversation. I mentioned Dan before at Hooked on Hounds. We were doing the sheep herding, and there was times where I had to tie Chili up, and it was time for me to work another dog, or for me to watch Dan work his dog and whatever. And there was like six dogs tied up, and some of them were not tied up under the trailer. They know that the wait there, it's not their turn unless they've been called out to be. In that moment, now Chili was having a hard time with it, first time really being tethered around sheep after working him, his high arousal. But after, you know, 25 minutes, half an hour, he was, you know, and I had to correct him, so I didn't have food to go and reward him when he was calm and quiet. He was whinging and carrying on, and I did give him a leash correction. He was tied up, he had his slip lead on as well, and I told him to quiet, gave him a correction, two corrections, and he's like, all right, I'll knock it off. He just lay there, he wasn't freaked out. When it was his turn, I got him back off the leash. We worked, he came up to me, he was happy, went back. The last two times I tied him up, calm and quiet, relax. I don't have to feed him, reward him or anything. I just tell him it's the wrong thing, relax, stop it. And I understand that you're leaking and you're really excited, but I'm not crushing him in that moment. I'm teaching him, hey, that's the limit. There is no... So I guess another thing as well is, not the point, but kind of the point, is that a gentleman that's been shadowing me the last couple months, Pat, he brought his dog over to our group class. He's been working through his reactivity. Dog gets overexcited when he sees dogs and carries on. I brought him out. Again, he wouldn't take food. He was way too overexcited, but you know, I handle him the beginning of the group class. Because it was session two and Pat didn't have like really any introduction of like how the class was going. So I would handle him. And he was carrying on and trying to get his focus. I know that he could do all of the things because I took him around the corner where there was no dogs and he had focus on me. As soon as he saw dogs, I didn't exist. So he displayed the behaviors that I know he could do. It was a moment of me following it up and I gave him a firm correction. I only gave him one firm correction. And after that moment, he's like, oh, okay, that's the limit. That's the consequence of not being able to check in and listen and behave essentially. And then, you know, I introduced him to the class and Pat was doing the same thing and it was really cool. Last week we were at class and it was at the end, we were chatting and Max was in there and I'm like, hey, and I grabbed the leash and I'm like, and then as soon as I didn't put any pressure on him, did not give him any leash correction, nothing. I just stood next to him and he ended up just sitting in not the same space, no more extra distance, same picture. But why didn't he carry on? And actually, in fact, he was trying to get my attention. I patted him and he wasn't like freaking out because I was holding the leash. If that's the image in your head, the image in your head should be, oh wait, hold on, why would he react and be squealing and carrying on when Pat was holding him, but when I held him he didn't? Is because he had the opportunity that he thought, I think I can get to this dog when Pat holds it, because it's probably happened. He's learning through the process, so he's had success in the past that he could push that boundary and get to that dog. Where with me he's like, yeah, Panos has been consistent the moment he's touched my leash. He's firm, he's fair. I'm not going to get that thing. So there is no anticipation of it. Hence, there is no carrying on. We did mention this in our last episode, or a couple of episodes ago, talking about this. So just thought I'd follow up on that. And it kind of ties into the food thing because you're not relying on food. So I think you know if I'm speaking to you, if it's somebody that like that that we've engaged with, you know, with many sessions, if you, whether you're a client or you've helped me out, you know who you are. Leave that pouch at home and go for the walk for the next week. I don't think, but again, because I'm not speaking to anyone in specific here, I don't think you're going to ruin anything. Actually, in fact, I think you're going to improve what you have and you're going to change your psychology about that. So I think that's really a good place to leave it. But the last thing I have here is you may be doing yourself a disfavor by relying on that food. Pressure is the constant. Food is not the constant. You're not bribing your dog anymore. You're communicating to your dog, be firm, be clear, you know, and save your reinforcement for things that you're doing with your dog, new activities, new skills, and still play with your dog, still give your dog reinforcement every day. You know, Chili gets it every day through training and gameplay, and of course, teaching him new skills or maintaining what we have. But when he's carrying on and he sees something that excites him, it's a, hey, knock it off, come back over here. It's social. I'm speaking to him. I'm not trying to bribe him. Hope you guys enjoyed today's episode. Much love. Until next time, if you have any questions for me to answer or any guests that you would like us to have on the show, DM us on Life With Your Dog podcast and we'll get back to you. Much love and have a good day. Bye. Thank you for listening to another episode of Life With Your Dog. Please share with your friends if you're enjoying our podcast and leave a review on Apple Podcasts to help others find the show. You can also find us on Instagram and Facebook, Life With Your Dog Podcast. My name's Panos, and to keep up with my dog training adventures, tips and techniques, you can find me on Instagram at np_dog_training, my website npdogtraining.com, or my YouTube channel, Nutris Pooches.
Thanks for listening, guys. My name's Luke. If you'd like to find out more about my dog training services, you can find me at www.kizuna, that's K-I-Z-U-N-A, canine.com.au. I'm also on Instagram at kizuna canine training. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.